listening to The Martial Brain, the podcast that explores the intersection between the martial arts, science, critical thinking, skepticism, and that wacky organ that floats inside our skulls in a pool of cerebral spinal fluid, making life unpredictably inspiring, infuriating, and sometimes just batshit crazy. I'm Jeff Westfall for The Martial Brain. We've got the enemy right where we want them. They're all around us. Part 3. The principle of interior lines in the practice of the martial arts. In the last two episodes, I discussed the military principle of interior lines and told several stories to illustrate. Quickly reiterating, the principle of interior lines states that in the unfortunate event that you're surrounded by enemy forces, there do exist a few small but important advantages in such a situation upon which a clever commander can capitalize. A very abstract way to describe this is that the fact that you control the interior space during the conflict allows you to construct and use a geometry of infrastructure that allows you to do more with your resources than the opponent can. In the example of Prussia in the Seven Years' War, Frederick the Great, despite his entire kingdom being massively outnumbered and surrounded, was able to crisscross it over and over again to counter repeated threats from Austrian, Russian, French, and Swedish opponents on his borders, faster than they could reposition their own forces on the perimeter. In the case of the Battle of Alesia, Julius Caesar constructed parallel wooden ramparts, the inner one encircling and facing the Gallic town he was besieging, and the outer one facing towards an enormous Gallic relieving force that surrounded him. These ramparts dominated the interior space between the two separate enemy forces and determined the geometry of the battle to come, allowing Caesar to quickly and safely shuttle troops back and forth to heavily attacked points facing both sides as they arose. And in the example of the Battle of Rorke's Drift, the British Lieutenant of Engineers had his men construct improvised fortifications out of burlap bags filled with dried corn, as well as with wooden biscuit crates. These improvised walls, along with the Mark II Martini Henry breech-loading rifle, allowed 150 men to hold off 4,000 determined Zulu warriors for 10 hours. Today, I want to draw a parallel with the way this principle is practiced in mass combat in the military to some similar concepts in the martial arts. Of course, the most obvious parallel would involve a fight in which you're surrounded by multiple opponents. But that's actually not where I want to go with this today. I plan to do a podcast in the future on that subject. Today, I want to talk about one-on-one combat, more particularly the situations in which the opponent, on the one hand, puts you in a position you'd rather not be in, but on the other hand, by doing so, creates opportunities you can exploit to your advantage. Just like with the military principle of interior lines, when things look bad in a fight, you must focus on quickly and calmly deciding what you can do and on what tools are available. The examples I will give further resemble the use of the principle of interior lines by creating interior spaces which you can use to the opponent's detriment. In the case of one-on-one combat, there are two different types of interior space. The first is the various spaces that exist between parts of the opponent's own body. One example of this involves a body part you may not think of first when you think of body parts that are significant in a fight. The armpit. Yep. Skeptical? You should always be skeptical, but allow me to explain. One thing that I relentlessly preach to my students, especially my grappling students, is to carefully guard the gap between their upper arms and body, only opening space there for brief moments, and even then only for a very good reason. I call this the T-Rex principle, because if you're properly applying it, the positioning of your arms makes them resemble the tiny forelimbs of this scary, predaceous dinosaur. One way that a grappler can capitalize on an opponent who fails to protect his armpits is to insert an underhook. You could do this with your right arm by reaching through your opponent's left armpit from the front and hooking your hand over his left shoulder from behind. Now that you occupy that space with your arm, it's difficult for the opponent to dislodge it, especially if you properly position and maintain the underhook. It gives you leverage to keep the opponent's elbow away from his body, putting the musculature of that arm and that quadrant of his upper body in a position of mechanical disadvantage. To put it simply, if you keep his left elbow away from his body, his left arm is weaker, frequently much weaker. Of course, that degrades that arm as a weapon and as a defensive tool. The underhook is also fantastic, provided that you have a good base, for lifting the underhooked side of the opponent's body in order to shift his weight over his other foot. This further degrades his offensive capabilities and sets up all kinds of throws, sweeps, manipulations, and strikes for you. A great opportunity to insert an underhook happens when your opponent tries to surround you with his arm by hugging your head or upper body with it. As I already stated, this attempt to surround you creates an opportunity to make use of the interior space. In other words, his armpit. It's impossible to hug an opponent without opening up your armpits and giving him interior space to exploit. Another body part that you can use to occupy the opponent's armpit is your lower leg. This is done in a particular kind of open guard used in jiu-jitsu, which I call the leg shield guard, as well as the leg shield half guard. Another interior space on your opponent's body you can exploit is the one under his chin. As a matter of fact, at my academy we have a name for this space. We call it the socket. Occupying this space can be done with your hand, shoulder, forearm, and most especially your head. This is useful when your opponent's head is higher than yours. The crown of your head jams into the gap at the opponent's neck, forcing his chin or jaw up and away. It works especially well when you also have attached yourself to his shoulder with an underhook, or with an overhook, or the two-on-one grip called a Russian tie. This head position gives you a lot of control over the opponent's posture, helping to set up strikes and throws. It's also quite effective in grappling on the ground, especially when passing the guard. I learned a form of isolation training from the great Eric Paulsen in which you and your training partner keep your hands behind your back as you each attempt to use the crown of your head to gain control of the socket under the other's jaw and chin. We call this drill giraffe wrestling, and it's a blast. For the next example, I first need to clarify something for the uneducated among you. When you're grappling on the ground, there's a technique called a sweep. This is the ground fighting equivalent of a throw or takedown. The person who you will sweep starts in your guard, be it closed guard, open guard, half guard, or any other. In this example, your opponent spreads his legs out extra wide to make a strong base, usually because he doesn't want you to sweep him. This creates yet another space between parts of the opponent's body, specifically a space between his legs, and more importantly, directly under his center of gravity. This allows a grappler who's well-trained in the modern sweeping game to enter and occupy that interior space in positions called deep half guard, X guard, and single leg X guard. In each of these positions, your legs, postural muscles, and arms work together to build a structure in this interior space that will put the opponent in a position of trying to stay upright while the structure hugely degrades his stability. If you want to know what it feels like to be in the deep half guard of someone who knows what they're doing, get a basketball and place it near you on the mat. Now place one knee on the ground about one leg length away from the ball. Place the heel of your other foot on the top of the ball and balance there, imagining that your opponent is tightly attached to the back of your hips and is using this connection to whip you around while you struggle not to fall. If you want to know what it's like to be in a skilled grappler's X guard, stand upright with your knees locked out straight while spreading your legs as far apart into the side splits as you can. Now imagine that from there you're being jerked around by the opponent. To simulate being in an opponent's single-leg X-guard, first determine how much your imaginary opponent weighs. Let's say, for example, 175 pounds. Now take 175 pounds of sandbags and securely lash them to one of your legs, from the bottom to the top of the leg. Now imagine that the sandbags are intelligent, can move under their own power, and are whipping their weight around in an attempt to bring you down. All of this should tell you that the ability to occupy and use the space between an upright opponent's legs turns you into a sweeping machine. The other kind of interior space you can exploit in one-on-one combat is, under certain conditions, the space between you and your opponent. The simplest example of this is the idea of the center plane. This is a vertical, geometric plane that cuts both you and your opponent in half along the long axis. Imagine that you have two radishes next to each other on your kitchen cutting board. If you want to cut both into equal halves with one stroke, you'll cut on their center plane. Boxing, fencing, and Wing Chun Kung Fu make great use of the center plane. If your opponent's attacks are coming around your flanks, in other words, curved attacks like hook punches, then the center plane is open, allowing you to attack up the center. Linear attacks take the shortest path to the target, allowing you to do more with less, landing your strikes more quickly and more often. In addition to helping your offense, occupying the center plane makes defense easier as well. In a way, the attacker who favors curved lines of attack is trying to surround you with his strikes, just like the Zulus surrounded the British at Rorke's Drift. This creates a void in the internal geometry at the center plane, which you can occupy and use to your advantage. Grappling brings out other ways an opponent might attack you that also resemble attempts to surround you. Most specifically, by getting on top of you in an attempt to hold you down or smash you in various ways. The key to survival in these cases lies in using your body to construct a stable structure that occupies and makes the best use of what little interior space you can make between your opponent and you. One of the simplest of these happens when your opponent tries to hold you down when you're on your back. Whether you're under the mount or under side control, if you can manage to work your way onto your side and connect at least one of your elbows to the knee on the same side, you have quickly built a structure that helps you breathe more easily and helps you use the space between the two of you to begin an escape. Another example is the seated butterfly guard. This is a position in which you're on your butt with your knees apart and your feet hooked inside the knees of an opponent who kneels facing you. Now, while this position might make you look like a sad little orphan perched on the mat, and the opponent may be sorely tempted to throw himself upon you, in reality, it's an incredibly stable position that gives you all the control over the interior space which it creates. If you use it correctly, you can easily resist your opponent's efforts to smash you or grind you onto your back. This is also a great time to have an underhook or two inserted as well. What your opponent will feel will, one moment, be like leaning onto a hard, bony pyramid, and the next like draping himself over a yoga ball that threatens to roll under him, projecting him over onto the mat. Well, that's all. I hope you liked this comparison between the military principle of interior lines and the solo martial artist learning to use the interior spaces. To me, it epitomizes the idea that despite having the odds against you, there's always some good science to assist you in a fight. Anyway, that's what I think. But I could be wrong. Let me know what you think, and check out old episodes of the Martial Brain podcast at my website, rpmartialarts.com. I'm Jeff Westfall for the Martial Brain. The Martial Brain is produced by Raging Squirrel Productions in association with the Rising Phoenix Martial Arts Academy. If you like the podcast, and would like to help it grow, go to iTunes or Stitcher and give it an honest rating and review. Contact me with questions about the Marshall Brain or about the Rising Phoenix Academy at my website, rpmartialarts.com.